Good evening. James McCanna here with my Science Hour, March 3rd, 2016. Tonight's main science topic, I'll be talking about a program that actually came out of some work that some students and a teacher were doing regarding Earth Day that's coming up April 22nd this year. And, of course, that's the day when we all try and reflect on saving the planet, which, let me tell you, is in total disaster mode today, man. That's all I can tell you. But anyway, the students try and have hope, but it's for all people, really. So I'll be talking about the a project that we put together, the teacher and myself and the help with the students. And it's something I posted on my webpage. There's a little link. You can go there. And this is something, or people can take bits and pieces of this and do an Earth Day project because the whole project is rather extensive. I'll be talking about that. First of all, a major announcement. As you know, I'm building my product line of water filters. Now, this is very impressive. First of all, I added the kitchen sink top water filter. And by the way, this is not really an advertisement. This is because there's a serious, serious need for real water filtration products in the home today. There are so many out there that really do not do anything at all. And it's really bad. I mean, so you have to be very careful. But anyway, I added the sink top. That's the one that plugs into the faucet on your sink, a standard faucet, not these modern fancy ones, but the standard kitchen faucet with the little screw-on screen. You take that little screen off, you plug this on, and it goes through a hose. It goes through one of the GF filters inside a housing and comes out basically chemical-free, leaves the minerals go through. So I've introduced that. Now I have what's called a whole house system. It's a tank. It's got to be installed by a plumber. So it goes into your basement, or I suppose if you're handy with those kinds of things, you could install it yourself. But it's a tank that goes in your basement. Now, remember that your water, that the water softener, so to speak, takes out iron and excessive minerals. So if you have excessive iron in your water, that's one of the more common ones. But when we're talking about aluminum and lead and those kind of pollutants, your soft water filter does not do anything to those. And so all kinds of things pass through that. So the filter that I have it's called a whole house system, and it removes primarily chlorine, odors, and some of the other toxins that are in the water. But the idea is you're not showering with this chlorinated water, which is really terrible. Your skin is your biggest organ on your body, literally. It's bigger than your heart and your liver and your intestines and everything else put together. Your skin is, and it absorbs readily any chemicals or anything put on it. So this is a way, and by the way, those little shower attachments, they're filters you put on your shower. We did some investigation on that. They really don't work because the contact time of the water on those, the water passes so fast through those that when you actually do measurements, they're lucky if they take out 25% of what they claim they take out, and they don't last very long. And so the bottom line is that they really don't, they're more to make you feel good than anything else. And so the whole house system, they run around $1,200 plus shipping was about $125. They can only be sold in the lower 48 states, not to Alaska or Hawaii, only the 48 states and no foreign orders on these because they're big, heavy systems. But the shipping is about $125, and it comes with an adapter that will adapt to either PVC piping or copper piping. But anyway, all that's on the information. So anyway, that's a new addition. And then in the background, this is something I won't put on my webpage because these are big industrial systems. But I also have, if anybody's interested, get a hold of me. and because I've got the capacity to do large industrial water filter systems now. But this whole house system is very important. You can put it in your house for a nominal fee. And by the way, this does not replace your kitchen water filter, which takes out a lot of other things that you don't want to be drinking. Some of the things that come out for showering, they're not going to necessarily kill you or anything like that. But the chlorine, especially the chlorine, is very damaging. So that's what the whole house system takes out. You still need the kitchen system to remove all those harmful chemicals and lead, etc. But anyway, that's on the webpage. I'm not going to talk any more about that. There's been some misconceptions about the Imperial filters that I released also on the webpage. They're double diameter. They're very fat if you're used to the typical white ceramic candles. And so people are asking what's the benefit or what's the trade-off, etc. And dollar for dollar, the Imperials will give you more filtration. They're the exact same formula. And so people are still buying the 10 packs of the standard size, etc. People are buying the 4 packs of the Imperials. And so I was even reticent to even post them because sometimes things like that just cause confusion. But, it's just another form factor. They will fit, and the standard size will also fit any. Now, this is a question I've gotten many emails on. People ask because they want to upgrade to my filter elements. They say, will it fit into, they bought some other brand 5-10 years ago, or they bought a filter at a garage sale, the gravity filter with the stainless steel containers or the plastic ones. My filter elements will fit all stainless steel containers that really have ever been made for gravity filters. And the reason is because they all grew out of the same form factor. And so mine will fit into all of those. And so no matter what brand or make or model you had, you can upgrade to my GF filters, which are nationally certified, etc. Okay, so anyway, that's there. Remember Toxi Solutions. Now, last week, you got to listen to that show. I had my guest, Roger Landry, who is basically the commander-in-chief, so to speak, of Toxi Solutions webpage and the Toxi Screen project. So I'll just say the name again so you remember it. There's a link at the top of my homepage, Toxi with a Y, T-O-X-Y, Toxi Solutions, plural, .com. That's it. Go there. It's a test kit where you can test. You can test yourself, and in a couple of days there will be a solution where you can test your water. So anyway, just a quick note. This is so disgusting, I shouldn't even read it on the air. But remember, weeks ago I was talking about the 1G form factor, so to speak, of going to other planets and other star systems. And I said you could get to Mars in one day, you could get to Pluto in 10 days, and that the route that NASA has been going, you know, taking 10 years to get out to Pluto, and, you know, what, 3 years to get to the planet Mars, and all this is, I said, this is ridiculous. So on, February 23rd, NASA comes out with a public announcement, says they've come up with this great idea using lasers to beam people to Mars in 2 to 3 days, they go. And then they have this general discussion about going to stars, and then they refer to some magical laser technology, which they don't talk about that in any detail at all. It's just kind of like magic Flash Gordon type of thing. They copied my statements literally word for word. I mean, that's how pathetic these people are. I'm not going to waste any more time on that, but it just shows you how disgusting they are. Anyway, that's enough of that. I'm going to be putting up on my webpage some frequently asked questions about the water filter things, and that's, to a lot of these people write in, ask the same question. So that'll be coming up along here pretty good. I wanted to talk just a minute about what is National NSF certification, how do you get it, etc. What is that? My filter elements have a National NSF certification. It's kind of like in science. Say that a scientist makes a claim. Okay, well, that's swell. But in science, what you need is independent verification. You need independent verification. What is independent verification? That means that a party that does not have a fiduciary interest, that does not have financial connections, that does not have literary connections or pals or buddies or relatives or any other connection, independent, makes the same process, goes through the same process, follows the same procedure, and then verifies that the claim is valid. And many times it requires two or three separate laboratories or to do this when you're dealing with science. And so, by the way, that's one of my statements regarding, say, NASA going to the moon. They have never had a third-party independent verification of that. So it, in the scientific sense, it's an unsubstantiated scientific claim. In science, you do not get, you don't have the liberty to verify your own claim. It has to be done independently. There's the famous case of Pons and Fleischmann back, a long time ago. They claimed they had cracked cold fusion in their laboratory. And they couldn't reproduce it. They couldn't tell another laboratory how to reproduce the effect. And so they were shamed out of existence, basically. And it's always used as a good prime example. Don't open your mouth in the science world until you have actually done something and it's can be reproduced by another independent laboratory when it comes to scientific claims like cold fusion or something like that, or going to the moon. So anyway, regarding my water filter elements, I could make claims and I could go out and go find my buddy to do some tests, or I could put dirt in the filter and let it go through and say, it looks like it's pretty clean. But there are national standards for the testing of water. That's an NSF national certification, and these certifications are given out by independent certified laboratories. In other words, they don't have a fiduciary position relative to the people getting the certification, as with my water filter elements. And this is an ongoing process. In other words, as the assembly line is making the ceramic filters and putting the material in to take out all of the other chemicals, etc., when that's going on, these are taken off the product line and tested at random. And so there's a whole process. It costs money. It costs materials. It takes a lot of time, a lot of paperwork. It takes a lot of continual effort. And my filter elements are the only ones that have this. When we're talking about, say, the gravity feed or something like that. And they take out the filtration. They filter out, and in some cases, they remove the, say, lead and aluminum and arsenic and fluoride all in the single filter. And this is nationally certified. In other words, there's an independent certified laboratory that does the testing. So when you open up that box and look at it, and there are other companies, and this is what I've been saying, you have to be very careful because some companies make claims of testing and things like that, and it sounds like this, but it really isn't. So you have to be very careful because in today's world, you need a filter system that does what it claims, because if not, how are you going to know sitting in your kitchen? You're not. I'm not going to go through any more of that. I'm going to go right into the Earth Day discussion here because this is so important. So in review, I was contacted by a teacher whose class, I should mention that the class is teaching agriculture. And so that's very interesting that they're teaching agriculture to these students, and you know, non-GMO, organic, and all of this stuff. So that was very interesting. But so they came up with a concept, and what they were interested in doing was trying to build a model of my wing generator, and only having a month, basically, well, they have till April 22nd. But I said, okay, well, why don't I do this? I'm going to make an outline, and you can pick and choose from this outline as you'd like. But it's a way for them to do an Earth Day project and then have some variability depending on what the students' talents and things like that would be. Anyway, I put this on my webpage. This, it's an 8-part program, and like I say, they could pick and choose one or many or all or none, or, you know, one, only one thing or something. But the concept is a free living farm. Okay, so this is a design project, a concept project in which they sit down and they brainstorm, and then, of course, typically for something like this, they make have booths and displays, and they set them up on tables, possibly in a gymnasium, and then talk about it. But it also gives them an idea of, you know, what living with the earth is really all about in a modern world. Now, mind you, we live in the 21st century here, and so we have automobiles and transportation. We have all kinds of things related to modern life. So one way of doing this would be to go back 100 years and say, well, how did people do everything 100 years ago? Many of those were good ways, but now we have some other modern factors mixed in. We have electricity. You know, the water is polluted. How do you deal with that? So anyway, here's my list, and it's called Free Living. I'll start over. Free Living Farm Design Project. This is the Student Earth Day Project subpage on my webpage. There's a little link right at the top. For Earth Day 2016. Now, I have presented, I'm reading from my webpage, so I'll just read for a minute here. I said, I have presented a concept I call free living. Now, I've talked about this on my radio show before, which means you have land and water and everything you need there. Of course, you can have a real job and live in the real world, but all of your necessities of living can come from your farm. A 5-acre farm is enough for a family, like back in the old days, but with modern living mixed in. Here's how it goes. And also, I mentioned that they should listen to tonight's radio show. List all of the things in your daily living. Everything from toothpaste and toilet paper to transportation, food, milk, clothes, whatever. Figure out how you can replace everything you buy in the store with natural products you produce on your farm. There are some great books on this topic, and I've got a few stored away. Look into community skills like spinning and making materials. How much time is taken versus today working a job and then buying your clothes at the store? So you go into the store and you get a pair of jeans for, you know, say $40, let's say. And what if you bought the jean material and then made those yourself? Could you make a good pair of jeans? Remember to mix all the modern and the old ways of doing things. For example, if you purchased LED light bulbs, you will save energy and have light for years to come, because the LED light bulbs will last for years. So it's a wonderful mixture of old with new. But you need electricity for this and electricity for other needs. Do you know how to spec out a home electric system? Okay, so now I'm going to stop there. Now we have many, many modern conveniences, say refrigerators, there's other appliances, which are very efficient. That's a factor that's gone into the design of everything from toasters to light bulbs to anything electric. But do you know how to spec out a home electrical system? So let's look at demand. Now, let's say you could store up electricity in units, and actually you can in a battery system. but there are other systems like hydrogen or stored compressed air or other types of systems of storing energy into batteries, into supercapacitors are coming online. There'll be more of that in the future. So how do you spec out a home electrical system? Okay, well, imagine your LED lighting. How much time in the day or the night are you going to run those bulbs and how many? You know what the wattage is. So you can, 100 watts, for example, if you run a 100-watt light bulb for 1 hour, that's 100 watt hours. That's a unit of energy. That's an amount of energy. So let's say that you have an LED that runs 10 watts. Okay, you can run that LED for 10 hours and use up the same 100 watt hours of energy. You see what I mean? So it's, and now let's take a refrigerator. You open up the door, you look at the specification inside the door, and it'll tell you how much electricity is being used by that refrigerator. Now there's a surge when the refrigerator first comes on, and then the amount of energy that it's used when it's running, how many watts. And so it would be like you can get efficient refrigerators for that'll run on maybe 50 watts of power, so half of a 100-watt light bulb. But it's not running all the time. It might run more in the daytime because it's warmer. But your refrigerator runs for maybe 3 minutes, and then it rests for 10 minutes. And then it runs for 3 minutes, and then it rests for 10 minutes. And so the idea is that you can calculate the amount of energy that that refrigerator uses per day, then multiply that times 30. That gives you per month. And okay, so what you do is you go through all of your home, you spec out all of your appliances, all of your usage, and you come out with a watt-hour amount of energy, and typically you would convert it into kilowatt-hours. And if you look at your electric bill, that would be a good thing to do. Ask mom and dad, if you're a student, for the electric bill. Look at it, and it'll say so many kilowatt-hours that you used that month, and then it'll give you the rate for the kilowatt hours, and then it multiplies those together, adds some other costs in, and that's your electric bill. But that would tell you how much electricity in kilowatt hours you're using per month on average. And you, in the winter, of course, you're going to use more for lighting. In the summer, you're going to use possibly more for air conditioning. And so maybe the summertime your electric use is higher than the winter time, unless you're using electric heating. So this is how you spec out your home for an electric system. So if you were using, say, the wing generator, or say some solar mixed in or something like that, then you would have this stored up in a battery, and then the battery would then convert into AC electricity through a unit called an inverter. There you're going to lose maybe 5% of the energy just in that conversion. So you have to subtract that off. That's not available because it's lost in the conversion. Okay, so anyway, this is a complicated thing, but there are, you know, there's a lot of information on the internet how to spec out a system and electrical home system. And the reason you're doing this is because hopefully someday we would have wing generators generating electricity, and then to spec out how many wing generators, what size we need for a community, we'd have to estimate what the community energy needs are. Okay. Number three on the list is list the major things that you need that are currently the largest part of your expenses. Housing, shelter, energy, list all your energy consumption, water, health-related items. Have someone do a special on electric cars and trucks. You hopefully already are doing work with organic and non-GMO gardening. Do you know about composting toilets? When human waste is properly composted, it can be used for growing food as fertilizer. So, you know, here are things that you can, you know, take something that typically would go into polluting the water into the system in town, you know, the water processing plant or the water treatment plant, as they call it. But just imagine all the chemicals, the cleansers and everything that goes down the drain at the house, soap, laundry soap, everything else. All of that goes into that water treatment plant. But remember that that does not take out chemicals. It does not filter out chemicals. If there's lead in the water, if there's other pollutants, it doesn't take those out. That all gets dumped into a river. It gets dumped into a watershed. It gets dumped back. Maybe it filters down into the ground or into a lake, another big holding pond. And all of that ends up back in the groundwater or in surface water, and somebody else gets to drink that. And so anyway, on your 5-acre farm, what you want to do is you don't want to pollute it. You don't want extraneous chemicals coming in, etc. You want to protect your water, your underground water, etc. Now, number four in the list, how to mix a modern life and life of 100 years ago. And then I say the Mecani wing generator and water filters are modern. Regarding the storage of food, there are many old ways that are still the best. What percentage of food value is lost in the various food storage methods? Like drying food is very good. It's very simple. You cut fruit, you cut apples, you cut vegetables, and you dry them, and they retain pretty much a lot of their goodness. So drying is a very good way. Canning is also a good way, where you can in glass jars and put the cover on. The old-fashioned cellar, in where you would have the area, it's like a little cave basically underground, or down off of the basement or something like that, a room that's maintained at a constant temperature of around, maybe around 50 degrees, and you put your fruit in there, sometimes whole fruit. Here's something that a guy told me once that his grandpa taught him. You take apples, and you go out to the orchard, and you buy big bushels full of apples, you bring them home. And, of course, back on the farm, you used to have your own apple tree where you, in the fall, you had bushels and bushels of apples. Well, how do you store those? You take each one, you wrap it in a piece of paper so it's totally enclosed, and then you set these in a barrel so that the apples don't touch. If you have a bad apple, you don't include that. You make that into a pie or something else in the fall. And now these apples will stay in your cellar good until the next summer, when you start to have apples again from your tree. That's an old method of storing apples. And so anyway, these, and I tell people, the students, to talk to your elder relatives and how they used to do things. How did they used to survive? What did they use for toothpaste? I mean, what did they do to clean their teeth? And of course, there's a modern, like, all kinds of modern toothpaste, but the thing we know now is that you don't want fluoride in your toothpaste. How can you have a toothpaste that's healthy but still cleans your teeth and doesn't allow tooth decay? So I'll tell you something, that coconut oil is one of the best things to use. Also, there's many essential oils that can go. Carbon, just basically carbon is a very, you can buy medical grade carbon inexpensively, or also sodium bicarbonate soda, baking soda is another way of cleaning your teeth, etc. So anyway, just how did the people used to do things? What did they use on the farm? Because they lived there. People lived out on the farm for thousands of years, long before modern toothpaste came along. What did they do? Well, a lot of people had bad teeth. And so that's because they didn't know enough to take care of them. By the time they were adults, they just assumed that people would have bad teeth. So going to the dentist, how do you clean your teeth if you're, just strictly living on the farm? There are ways to do it. There are ways to do it. If you go to India, it's very interesting. The people in India have very clean teeth, and there's a plant that they have there, and they make a little toothpick out of it, and they work it into their teeth and clean their teeth with this little toothpick. But in the wood, is something that really helps to preserve your teeth. Peppermint is another. It's a natural oil that comes from the peppermint plant. You can easily grow that any place. So at any rate, the let me continue here. Okay, back to my list. Create a free living farm with displays. Free living means you produce everything you need, plus you do not pollute or damage the environment. In fact, you improve the land as you live there. Every day, every year, you have actually improved. The older dying trees is what you cut for firewood. You allowing the young, healthy trees to grow through strong. And a big old tree takes a lot of water and nutrients and also blocks the sun from hitting the younger trees. So you manage your forest, you know, letting the healthy trees grow, taking the old ones out, any mold, etc. You're careful not to allow that to start growing into your trees. And, you know, you have a woodlot, you have a big garden area, hopefully a greenhouse where you can grow three or four seasons of the year, so you can have your green vegetables, etc. And chickens with free-ranging chickens with eggs that, anyway, there's all of these methods of having really good food that are non-polluting, non-GMO, etc. But last but not least, look at some of the ancient societies, like the Inca, which I have been studying lately. When people came of age in the Inca society, they were given their own land, where they raised their own food, plus contributed to the common pool so no one was hungry. They developed new strains of food. There were no homeless and no starving or poor. They all contributed to the common projects, and they spent time in religious ceremonial studies centers. They had three laws: do not steal, do not lie, do not be lazy. Other cultures could be looked on as failed since they collected too much from the people like the Maya. It's known that the Mayans vacated the cities. It got too crazy. The rulers were just getting nuts. Remind you of something that's going on today? Imagine a world in which people's food and livelihood comes from a few miles around them. And then point number eight, and this is the one I'll be talking about a little bit more right now. Can you imagine a world like this, plus a world with high technology used for the benefit of all, including mass transportation or even possibly space travel, and the use of space for eco-friendly lifestyles? Okay, so that's kind of a mouthful. But, okay, so part of this is living off the land. Now, can you imagine a worldwide society in which people are basically distributed, not in the cities, but they still have a lot of the culture, and the people think, oh, well, I want to live in the city because there's the theater and there's music and culture and all of this. Some of our best music that I like came out of rural districts. And there's all kinds of music. And some of the great musicians came out of rural settings. And when they sat down at night, they didn't have television and video games and everything else. They had their instruments. And when I was a kid, I'd go out and visit my friends on the farm, and I experienced this. And I'd pick up an instrument, and, you know, I wasn't very good, but everybody was like, hey, you know. And pretty soon you got to be good because you watched what other people did, and then you went and visited other people, and they sat down and played music, and, you know, this was part of the culture. That doesn't happen anymore. You know, so the family getting together and playing music and singing, etc. There used to be a lot of family groups. You know, there'd be a family together, sisters or brothers or combination, you know. And that doesn't happen that much anymore. Kids get together and form groups today. But the whole idea is that there's a social development that goes along with this. Now imagine space travel. What are you going to do for years and years traveling around in outer space? that's a big order. So I can imagine some kids might sit there and play video games for years and years and years. And they would be perfectly happy. But I can't imagine that as being very productive. But for me, space is kind of like being on a boat or enjoy going on a lake and going fishing. It's something you do and then you come back. But Earth is your home base. This is your planet. This is your home. This is the place you take care of, because really, we can think about going to other stars and maybe there's another planet like Earth someplace, but there are thousands of factors that allow us to live on planet Earth. Our bodies have adapted, if you want to call it that. I mean, just look at the air that we breathe, the magnetic field, the amount of radiation we can tolerate. Our eyes are set to the visible spectrum that comes through the particular atmosphere of Earth, the gravity, you know, if the amount of gravity on Earth. There's thousands of factors. I could go on and on and on about all of the good factors on planet Earth that our bodies have adopted. The rain, the amount of water, the moisture in the air. Yeah, I mean, there's just so many things. So we have to take care of this planet. So Earth Day is a wonderful day. It was started by some people that actually have some contact with some of the people that were the original founders. And, you know, it took off. It was these people were very good at promoting and getting this concept out there. But unfortunately, a lot of it is not followed by, say, corporations who are not good stewards of the planet. Also, let's look at, say, the military is one of the biggest users of resources on the planet, and it doesn't come back to help us in any form. They use, they don't put back. We can't have organizations like that. You think, oh, they defend us. Well, they're not defending us. They're actually causing a lot of damage all around the world. That's really a bad situation. So at any rate, living on this planet and maintaining it is a job for everybody. But we have to do more than just our own part and reduce our own footprint. That's where it starts. But we have to stop the Monsantos, the polluters, the people that have no conscience, that put chemicals in the ground that destroy the ability of everything to grow. I went through Kansas, and some of the people were losing their farms there, so they weren't farming. They had not planted. And here was, next to it was this big, beautiful-looking field of corn, which was all GMO with Roundup, etc. And then the fields where there was nobody working them were like a desert. Not even weeds were growing there. It was very scary to see. But going back to the theme of outer space, to have a society go into outer space, you have to have a group of people who, first of all, get along. If you have 100,000 or more people living in a big space station that's autonomous, and that is, in a sense, where this is going. Because if you can live on your 5-acre farm, then possibly through concentrated hydroponics and growing methods, we can someday go into space and have autonomous space programs, but it's not going to be possible without some cultural changes in the way we live today. Man is kind of competitive, let's put it that way. And so having your own space, having your own things, especially when it comes to nations and boundaries, can be a bit of a problem. And, of course, we're seeing that today in the world today. But imagine an autonomous space station where you have all the food you need. You're probably not going to change clothes a lot, maybe for fashion purposes or whatever. But, you know, as for myself, I'll be real honest with you, it's not something that I would care to do myself. I like Earth. I like the variety of Earth. And I think we live on a beautiful planet. Like I said, my vision of outer space is, yeah, I'd probably like to go there if it's safe, if it's comfortable. If we have artificial gravity, I'm probably not going to do I'm not going to do real well in 0G myself. I'd probably be the first guy to lose my cookies all over the place. Having artificial gravity, which I'm amazed none of the space programs have used at all. And it's very damaging not to have gravity. Your bones are affected, etc. And it's very simple to do. Just to have an object spinning on the end of a string is a way to create artificial gravity with another weight at the other end. Have them spinning around one another, etc. Now, one of the issues in dealing with the free living farm is that if we were to go into outer space, and this is, like I say, part 8 of this project, so this is pretty, I would say, advanced. Imagining all of the environmental factors that we take for granted here on Earth, including a magnetic field, the lunar cycle. I mean, all of the people on this planet are connected into the lunar cycle. And so the cycling of all types of plant activity, animal activity, etc., is locked into the lunar cycle. So in outer space, you're not going to have that lunar cycle, which is partly electrical. You know, so how would you replace or duplicate that? And in outer space, you would completely lose this. You have the day-night cycle, which actually changes for a lot of people. You have a different, the seasons. You have something called basically cabin fever. If you're in the same environment for a long period of time, it happens in the northern climates where people are in a cabin for over winter. They call it cabin fever. There's also a depression that sets in. So there's all of these factors that you'd have to deal with if you had an autonomous group of people going into outer space. For me, I really wouldn't be able to do it. Actually, in the early days of the space program, the Navy is the one that wanted the authority to go into space, or the funding, so to speak. And in a sense, they still have it. The Navy has a very large-scale secret program of outer space activity. It's not well known, but we always think that the Air Force is the one that manages the military side of the space shuttle, etc., but it's really not true. But the Navy thought that they should be better suited for outer space because they have people on ships and they have to deal with this. They have to deal with the reality of a sailor being on a submarine that's under the water for 6 months at a time. They have all of the systems to take the carbon dioxide that people breathe out and convert it back into oxygen and have a closed loop system. I mean, you need all the food on board. Everything you need is in that submarine, and they don't come up for, you know, I don't know how long now, 6 months at a time. You need the psychological training. You need people who are, I mean, a submarine has not got a lot of elbow room exactly. You know, and all of these people have to work together as a team. So the Navy is really better set to be an outer space entity than the Air Force, where they have big wide open spaces and big facilities and everybody has their own room and they can come and go as they want. The Navy is different. You're on a ship, that's home. That's home base. And that's all there is to it. You have to exercise. You have to everything. You have to maintain good health and not see the light of day for a period of 6 months. I don't think I would fare well at that, but there are people that do that, and that's their assignment, and they do well. I met a guy who was a physicist. He was a high-level scientist, and he told me for 35 years. So there's people that can do that. I don't personally think I could. But anyway, back to this free living farm. There's a lot involved here. There's a lot of thought that could go into just aspects of this project. Studying electric cars. What are the advancements in batteries, for example? Supercapacitors are coming out, supercapacitors with graphene. They make them small now. You can actually buy these. They're off the market. They're not making big one supercapacitors yet, at least not commercially for normal people like you and me. I'm sure the military has them. But the supercapacitors, the supercapacitors charge up very quickly. They hold a lot of power, and they can discharge very quickly. And so that's some of their properties. So how do these factor into the future world where we have wing generators, say, on the farm? You have your own wing generator. It can pump water. It can compress air. It can use electrolysis to create hydrogen or methane, which can the methane can burn in your current gas stove. Your gas refrigerator could run off methane. One of my favorite forms of refrigerator is one that's both electric and propane. So you can switch back and forth just by turning a dial, and it'll run on either electric or it'll run on propane. And so, but you can also set that up to run on methane. It's just a little bit different hole in the little fixture where the gas comes out. That's the only different. Or if you want to change to natural gas, you could do that also. But you can create methane with electrolysis and a wing generator. So it'd be another method of storing energy, compressed methane, compressed hydrogen, which can also be used relatively safely to burn in an automobile. There are hydrogen engines available, or simply in supercapacitors. I like electricity myself because the motor will also serve as the brakes. The electric motor. So it was used also as brakes to make the car go and then for braking. And then when you brake, you send that energy back into the system. That does not happen with hydrogen or other more modern forms of fuel that you can create. So my guess is in the end, when all of this washes out, and like I was describing to another person today, that the race of energy storage, whether it's compressed air or hydrogen or compressed methane using electrolysis or super batteries, super capacitors, other forms of, there's a new sodium ion battery out that could take the place of the lithium ion batteries that we use today. All of these technologies are racing ahead. And it's kind of like a horse race where the horses are racing and there's an imaginary finish line up there someplace, but that finish line keeps moving. So the horses are running. All of these technologies are, one gets ahead for a little while, then the other one catches up and gets ahead. I don't know where it's going to settle out. I don't know what the final solution is going to be. My guess is that graphene supercapacitors is going to win the day. That's my current prediction. And it's simply because it's very clean. You can cycle them, a million times. There's really no preparation. Graphite carbon is the basis, so it's readily available. It's not something you have to dig up or mine or use chemicals to create or any other complicated manufacturing process, although graphene itself is a naturally occurring product. You can manufacture it relatively easily, just like graphite, like for sporting goods, and it's used all over in the military and in aerospace, etc. Super material based on the simple structure of the carbon atom. Carbon crystals, diamonds, you can create diamonds in the laboratory using an electron beam and vaporized carbon. So we're heading down some technological roads, but my guess is that the graphene supercapacitors will win the day. And of course, once you're out in space, you have a huge amount of energy available in solar light. Changing that with solar panels into electricity and storing it etc. In outer space, you have something you can do also. You can gather hydrogen. It's very available out there. Put it in a big bag and then use it to create energy, also collecting oxygen. So anyway, all of these technologies are in the future, but back to the farm living today, the modern life mixed with the old life, it'd be really interesting to see what students come up with. Also methods of construction. Maybe we should stop using wood, start replanting the forest, get the forest growing again. That'd be a super Earth Day project. And using earth materials. If you look in most of the third world countries, using earth materials is the norm. So you have what? Cement blocks that are made out of clay, baked clay blocks, whether they're solid or the type that have the big holes in them. Cement and all types of earth-based materials, many of them that mix with water, you know. And so there are the old-style earthen homes. There are many different types of earthen homes where you build kind of a structure of sticks or wood or bamboo, and then you fill it in. You make mud, real loose, consistent mud, and you pack it in. And then you cover it with a cement, which is adobe. That's the method of building an adobe house. And they're very efficient energy-wise. They maintain a constant temperature inside. Even on the hottest days in the American Southwest, the adobe structures were like cool like a refrigerator. And then in the wintertime, they maintain the temperature also. If you have a fire inside, they warm up, and the heat that maintains the latent temperature that's stored in the building itself creates heat. So they're very comfortable to live in, all made with earthen materials, very inexpensive, and you don't use wood. The only thing they used wood for were the beams to hold the roof up, and it's very hard to make earthen materials that will do that. With cement, you need rigid rebar, etc. So wood, but there again, you don't have to use tons and tons of wood. There's nothing more beautiful than an adobe house with the wood beams and the natural roof, and they're just beautiful. They give you a very warm feeling when you're in them, a very earthen feeling. There again, housing using natural earth materials. So what a better project than to possibly build a small building with earthen materials. Energy efficient, with a fireplace built into it, where you basically heat, and very efficient. If you have, this is what they also used to do, is they'd build a separate, the oven and fireplace right in the middle, so the majority of the energy would maintain in the building itself. And not a lot of energy went up the chimney. In Africa, they use a form of cooking urn that it looks like kind of like a gourd with a very long neck on it. And so what they do is it's a very low heat cooking process in which the water at the bottom is formed into steam, and as the steam moves up into this long top, it condenses and then falls back down. So it does not use much water. It's very efficient. It does not use much heat, and it's like a pressure cooker, you know, except it's you're cooking in steam in this container. So very efficient, just burning natural fuels. And by the way, you do not always have to use wood for burning. The American Indians, the Native Americans, I shouldn't say Indians because that's a misnomer. But the Native Americans used buffalo chips, basically buffalo droppings. And once they're dried, they're burned, they don't smell, and as a source of fuel for cooking. And so, I mean, there's all of these possibilities for using naturally occurring materials, very efficient living, and then keeping your energy needs down. Where do we burn most of our energy today? That'd be another wonderful project to see how much energy people burn, say, just driving to work and back, as compared to heating their house. And I can tell you something, you probably spend more energy driving to work and driving home and driving the kids to school and energy needs, or take the school bus system. How much energy is used to transport all these kids around, drop them off at the front of their house and everything? How much energy is actually used for just these types of activities? And you're going to find out it's a lot of energy. And the reality is, we are not... There was a story about so-called peak energy a few years ago. There's no such thing as peak energy. There's tremendous quantities of energy around the world. It's just that we have to stop misusing it. We have to stop using as much energy as we use. Get to a lifestyle where we're using 10% or less of the energy we're using today. That would be a goal that's very achievable if we change our lifestyle. Literally look into also this idea that we all need a 40-hour-a-week job to exist. This is part of the point of the free living farm also. That sure, you can go out, get a job, work a couple days a week, and have extra money, have, you know, get those extra things that you like in life, it's not a problem. But not being excessive. So all of that time spent working, etc., change the lifestyle. Maybe right now Americans are unemployed. Maybe what we have to do is change the lifestyle. In Russia right now, very interestingly enough, Putin, the president of Russia, is creating vast areas where they're opening it up to people to settle, just like in the 1800s in the United States. They're opening up vast areas to settle. And the people, he said, just anybody that wants to go out there, take your family, go out there. You know, we'll help you build a house. They're not just sending them out there like in the 1800s. You got on your horse, you went out, you made your claim, you had your wife and your axe and your kid, and that was it, and maybe a dog. You know, and you just lived out there and tried to create a living. Well, that's not what they're doing in Russia. They're helping these people create a living, and what they want is basically a distributed population. And they consider that to be a much healthier population with the cultural base, with the music, with all of the other cultural things that will develop, and get away from this Western-style 40-hour-a-week job, which is destroying the lives of many people. Because if you don't have that job, which most people don't now, I don't know if you've seen the closings of the Sears and Macy's and all of the other chain stores out there. They're closing hundreds and thousands of stores around the country, laying people off, and there's no future for them to come back. And in the meantime, they've destroyed all the mom-and-pop businesses, so there's nothing left out there. So anyway, go to my webpage. I have four links. I have my sales page. I have the Taxi Solutions link to go to there. Check that out. Via Viente, I want to really promote that. That is such a wonderful product developed in Ecuador, where people live over 100 years because of the tremendous content of this the minerals, all of the content of this amazing product called Via Viente, and of course carrot bars. But go to the webpage jmccsci.com. Seven letters, JMCC, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo.com. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.